Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer at WNYC. It's not just Friday. It's follow-up Friday, where we dig a little deeper on some things that came up briefly during the week. And we'll play a clip now of something that Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt, minister of the Universalist Unitarian Society on the Upper West Side, said during our Martin Luther King event on Sunday. We aired it on the program on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. And this goes back to Proposition 8, the California ballot initiative that banned gay marriage in the state. Lots of lingering questions and emotions, of course, about just why that measure passed, and particularly about the role of African Americans in passing the measure. I asked her about the stat that's been widely circulated, that 70% of African Americans had voted for Prop 8, something she had called a piece of propaganda and a lie on her blog. Here is Reverend Bray McNatt's response to my question.
Well, the truth is that there just aren't enough real numbers about black people in California to make that true. In addition to that, when places like a couple of polls, including the National Gay and Lesbian Foundation, did a study, and the real predictor about who and what people were going to vote for Prop 8 had to do with religious affiliation and not with race.
So lots of factors there, race, class, age, religion, and while the whole truth may not lie in the numbers alone, much of it does. So let's bring in Patrick Egan, a researcher at NYU who has co-authored a study in which he really dives into the Prop 8 numbers to help clear some of this up. Patrick, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
On the simple headline number in my original question, did 70% of African Americans vote for Prop 8?
Well, our best guess is that African American support for Prop 8 was significantly lower than 70%. And our guess is based on lots and lots of different data sources, including polls conducted just before and just after the election, and also precinct-level data from California voters. And the sum kind of total of all of those data sources indicates that the number, that is the percentage of African Americans supporting Prop 8, was more in the range of 57 to 59%, obviously a much lower number than had been reported from the exit poll.
Does that mean the exit polls were that far off?
Yeah, you know, the exit polls, they do a great service in that they help us call elections on election night, and they also help us understand why people voted the way they did. But there are sort of drawbacks to the design that make it difficult for them to assess support among geographically clustered populations, particularly when you're talking about racially segregated populations. And in this case, it appears that they just drew an unrepresentative sample of African Americans, and that sample produced the number that had been reported.
Do you agree with Reverend Bray McNatt that the real predictor had to do with religious affiliation, not race?
Well, let me clarify what she said. The predictors that were the strongest in terms of shifting the greatest proportion of votes out in California in November were not race or ethnicity, but they were what we've been calling religiosity, and that's measured just by frequency of attendance of religious services. Other variables included age, party identification, and political ideology. So those four variables really shifted a lot more votes than race or ethnicity, which we feel has been getting kind of an outsized amount of attention in the wake of Prop 8.
So religiosity, if you get church-going African Americans who may be liberal on a lot of standard political issues, economics, and foreign policy and things like that, they may be against legal gay marriage, similarly to white conservative churchgoers who might be conservative on all those other things?
Well, let's see. Probably a simpler way to put it is that if you take people of any race or ethnicity and look only at those who attend religious services weekly or more, there was no difference among those groups of voters. Whites, blacks, Asians, and Latinos all voted for Prop 8 at the same, and I might add, very high rates of numbers. However,
the white,
if you compare white conservatives with African Americans, white conservatives still did vote for Prop 8 at higher levels than blacks.
Right. And white churchgoers, I think, were the most likely to vote for John McCain.
That's right, yeah. So a high correlation there. And, you know, I think this is what the reason that the sort of race and ethnicity factor is getting so much attention is that people are surprised to see blacks and Latinos who are such strong members of the Democratic coalition vote in a way that would seem to be against the interests of another strong member of the Democratic coalition, which is gay people. So there's certainly a fair amount of education to be done, I think, in both camps on these issues. But again, we feel that the amount of attention that's been given to this is probably overblown, given the true factors that drove the vote out in California.
And the narrative that emerged, and I think one of the reasons so many African Americans are upset about the media portrayal of this, regardless of the numbers, the narrative that emerged was that, and was echoed prominently by Rush Limbaugh and elsewhere in the conservative media and throughout the blogosphere, was that Barack Obama drew a lot of African-American voters to the polls. Those voters were more likely than others to vote against Prop 8. Ergo, Prop 8 passed because of Barack Obama and the black vote.
Right. Yeah, that's been something that's been said a lot. And, you know, we don't actually look at that in detail in our report because that requires a whole different set of calculations about sort of hypothetical turnout scenarios. But let me tell you this, which is that when we look at the data in our survey, the group that was the least supportive of Prop 8 were voters aged 18 to 29. And we also know that Obama brought out a lot of those voters as well in California and throughout the nation. So, you know, my first guess would be that the Obama, to the extent that there was an Obama phenomenon of turnout in California, it was probably a net wash in terms of Prop 8.
Now, of course, this isn't just a statistical question. It's a highly emotional one. So let's take a listen to the rest of Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt's answer to my question about this at our Martin Luther King event.
The truth is that I personally regard this as one of the ways in which people who have been previously marginalized are used as wedge issues. It's so much easier to use black people and Hispanic people and Asian people as a wedge with gay and lesbian people and let them call each other names on blogs than it is to have everybody get together and do their job, which is to make sure that every American has the right to marry who they love.
Now, Patrick Egan, NYU researcher, you're a statistician first and foremost, but what do you make of that claim on a political level? How do you see this, if you do, used as a wedge and marginalization issue, perhaps by some people knowingly and purposely?
Well, you know, as a political scientist, one of the things that we know for sure is that, as I said earlier, blacks and Latinos are strong members of the Democratic Party's coalition. And one thing that we're certainly seeing is that despite the efforts of the Republican Party to peel off those voters on the basis of kind of moral values issues like gay rights or abortion or what have you, they haven't been very successful. Blacks and Latinos support Democratic candidates at very high rates, particularly out west. And what you're seeing here on Prop 8 is this interesting example of what happens when you allow voters to, instead of voting for a candidate or a party, to vote just on one issue. And when that happens, that's when you see the kind of split in a coalition that you saw, I think, in California. And so I don't think it's actually a very effective wedge issue with regards to African Americans and Latinos. It may be a wedge issue for voters who are more in the middle of the political spectrum and are easily, are swayed by that kind of issue.
Patrick Egan, researcher at NYU, who has co-authored a study in which he dives into the numbers on the passing of Proposition 8, banning gay marriage in California. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
It's not just Friday. It's Follow-Up Friday, where we dig a little deeper on things that came up earlier during the week. And perhaps you remember that President Obama gave a pretty important speech earlier this week. We spent a fair amount of time breaking it down, but we really didn't talk that much about the very end of his speech when the president told the story of the Battle of Trenton, good New Jersey reference, where the revolutionary troops were close to defeat.
At a moment when the outcome of our revolution was most in doubt, the father of our nation ordered these words be read to the people. Let it be told to the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet it.
Now, upon hearing that, I, like I suspect many others, assume that those were indeed the words of the founder of our nation, George Washington. But lo and behold, during Wednesday's show, when we were discussing the speech, we got a comment on our webpage from listener Karen Thorson, who offered a correction. Karen is with us now. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the air on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for recognizing Thomas Paine's quote.
Well, you recognize Thomas Paine's quote. We just recognized you recognizing it. What's the reference?
It comes from American Crisis, which is the he wrote that literally at a moment of near defeat when they were retreating from New York on a drumhead. He sat by the light of a campfire and wrote the words. And this became a pamphlet. He paid his own money to have it printed, gave it to Washington, rode up on horseback, delivered it to Washington by the side of the Delaware. Washington had it read to his men. And that was part of what inspired them to cross that icy river.
So Washington did read it to his men, but Thomas Paine wrote it. Did Washington steal Paine's words, or did Thomas Paine give him the rights?
Oh, not in the least. He absolutely gave it, and later that the American Crisis, along with his first pamphlet, Common Sense, became best-selling works. He gave all of his profits to help support the revolution.
And to be fair to Obama, he did say in the speech that George Washington ordered these words read to the people. So he didn't explicitly credit Washington with writing the words.
Exactly. No, I think Obama was correct in his depiction of what happened. I think that it might have been nice if he mentioned Thomas Paine, because Paine has really been kept out of the pantheon. He's the one founding father who's been left out of a lot of textbooks, and this is in part because of various political things that happened in his later years.
Who's the best speechwriter in your opinion, Paine, Washington, or Obama?
Oh, Paine's good. Obama was right to quote him.
Karen Thorson is a filmmaker and writer currently working on The Paine Project, a documentary and museum exhibition about Thomas Paine. Karen, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
As I went out one morning to breathe the air around Tom Paine's, I spied the fairest damsel that ever did walk in chains.
Did you know that Bob Dylan had a Tom Paine reference in one of his songs? All right, Follow-Up Friday continues now with the emerging reports about the Purple Tunnel of Doom. But seriously, purple was a big color at this year's inauguration. George H.W. Bush was wearing that bright purple scarf. Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi were both wearing purple. But for a lot of folks, especially those holding purple tickets to the inauguration ceremony, that's their least favorite color by far right now, because their tickets landed them in a crowded tunnel for hours, nowhere to go, while the ceremony took place above their heads. Joining us now is Raymond Lee, an actor here in New York City. He happens to play Eddie in Mamma Mia right now. He was one of the many stuck in this purple tunnel of doom last Tuesday, and he's even made a YouTube video about the ordeal, which he's posted to our Facebook group, among other places. And we welcome Ray to WNYC. Raymond Lee, hi, thanks for coming on.
Hi, thanks, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
So what was this tunnel exactly, and how did you get stuck in it?
Well, actually, we were on the streets of D.C. at, like, D Street and First Street. I wasn't even aware that there was a tunnel until after we had left. So this was basically the second big section of people that were trying to get in. And we all both, I believe, had purple tickets in both sections. So there was a tunnel section and a big outdoor street section that filled about 3 blocks, I would say.
Basically, they gave out more tickets than they had actual spaces, right?
I guess so. You would think that they would, you know, give out enough for that space. But, you know, what, looking at the pictures and the video clips on YouTube, I guess they just give out way more than they should have.
A lot of folks are pretty upset about this, and there's a lot of chat about this online. Did this ruin the inauguration for you?
Yeah, I was there with my boyfriend, Robbie Kearns, and we were, you know, going to have a great day of it and see a historic moment, and we were just excited to be there that morning. And then slowly, hour by hour, it just kind of turned into despair, and, you know, we were like, maybe we'll get in, maybe we'll get in the last moment, and it did ruin the inauguration day for me. I'm very proud that, you know, Barack Obama, our president, is finally in office. But it'll be about a couple days and maybe weeks till we actually look, watch the inauguration on our DVR.
I want to be clear about what Facebook group I was trying to reference before. We're going to put your video up on ours. But there is a Facebook group that has sprung up specifically as a social network for all the people who are stuck in the purple tunnel of doom, right?
Yep, there is.
And what kind of stuff is up there besides your video?
You know, there is articles. People have posted different things, you know, kind of actions that have been taken. There's also been stories from each person. And actually, some people did get in. So it's interesting to see kind of who got in and how they got in. But the majority are stories of people who had traveled and had didn't make it, you know, past the gates. There's also photos. There's also videos. I think the main one is the survivors of the Purple Tunnel of Doom. There are two other groups that I believe I'm a part of, one that is Let Us In Purple Gate, and then something about I Survived the Purple Tickets or something like that, that I'm a part of.
Obama's got his first gate, Purple Gate.
He got his Purple Gate, and it's perfect because I think I took a shot of the Purple Gate, and that's how I found out the title. You know, it's just right there. Didn't have to think too much on that one.
Are you having fun playing Eddie and Mamma Mia?
Oh, I have a blast. We have an amazing cast, and it's just such a fun show, and especially during a time when a lot of Broadway shows close, to have a show where people come and have fun is an absolute blessing.
After your Purple Tunnel of Doom experience, if you had it to do all over again, would you vote for John McCain?
I would still have voted for President Barack Obama, definitely.
Raymond Lee, see him as Eddie in Mamma Mia on Broadway, but unfortunately, one of the New Yorkers who got stuck at the inauguration in the Purple Tunnel of Doom. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one long horn, one big eye. I commenced to shaking and I said, "Hoo-wee." It looks like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
And that's our follow-up Friday for this week. Coming up in a minute, we will start our preview coverage of Governor Patterson's announcement of Kirsten Gillibrand, expected 10 minutes from now.